Now, the president of the United States is by no means a Klansman, but when the former Klan head David Duke came out in support of his campaign, Trump at first pointedly declined to disavow him. As president, he equivocated about the white supremacists who marched in Charlottesville with torches. And he recently referred to countries in Africa and Haiti, majority black nations, as shithole countries. The White House later denied the remark, but racists like Richard Spencer were thrilled that the president thought this way and that he came out and said it in a meeting in the Oval Office. It's impossible to deny that white supremacy is closer to the seat of power than it has been for generations. Andrew Morantz has been reporting for The New Yorker on the movement known as the alt-right, which includes white supremacists, Holocaust deniers, misogynists, the whole works. Some factions in that movement even model themselves directly on the Klan. And Andrew is studying how these groups hope to change political discourse, not just on the fringe, but for everyone in the United States. Andrew, Linda Gordon described the what seemed to be the sudden reappearance of the Ku Klux Klan in the 20s and the way it, I wouldn't say infiltrated, it just assumed its place in American government. You had presidents who supported it, governors who were members, many members of Congress who were members, millions of people who were members of the Ku Klux Klan. Now we live in an age where the president of the United States has made it very clear what his views on race is, at least I think so. Many others do. What are we seeing here? How is this related to the phenomenon of the 20s, the rise of the alt-right and white nationalism?
I think what it shows is nothing is static when it comes to public opinion and therefore public policy. You know, we have this kind of inchoate sense that politics, you know, are based, yes, on money and lobbying and all that stuff, but they're also based on public opinion. But what is public opinion? How does it get formed? Well, if you have millions of people running around in robes and hoods, that's a sign of public opinion, right? So, you know, you bring that to the present day. The fact that you can see torches being carried in the city of Charlottesville and the statue of Thomas Jefferson being surrounded with people chanting about Jews will not replace us, that changes the discourse, right? So even if those people are fringe and even if it's a few hundred people only, people are seeing that on their TV sets and they're aware that it's a real thing. And then it enters the discourse. People have to respond to it. People have to react to it.
So there's a phenomenon that is talked about a lot lately. It's even the title of a 2010 Glenn Beck novel, a thriller, and it's called The Overton Window. What is that and how is it relevant to the discussion?
So the Overton Window is kind of a public policy sort of dry way of talking about these ideas. So there's this public policy think tank called the Mackinac Center. A guy who worked there named Joe Overton had this concept that what is possible to push in terms of public policy, if you're a representative, you can only submit bills that fall within the Overton window. So stuff that's too libertarian is too far outside to the one side, and stuff that's too statist is too far to the other side. So, you know, if you think about, you can pick any issue. If you pick gay marriage, for example, you know, very recently in public policy terms, it was literally unthinkable that marriage could be defined as including same-sex couples. And now it's pretty much unthinkable that a mainstream politician would oppose it. I mean, Donald Trump is for it. So that Overton window shifted dramatically over time. Some things shift less dramatically or even, you know, move in a reactionary direction.
But, so how does that relate to what we're talking about in terms of race and racism?
So the alt-right, the hardcore white nationalist alt-right, they see their project as pushing the window in the direction they want it to go. So they don't see themselves as a mainstream political movement where they're trying to get out a ground game and knock on doors. And they're trying to be the quote-unquote intellectual vanguard. They're trying to take the unsayable and make it sayable. So they keep saying it and saying it. So there's this idea that originates with a bunch of far-right French intellectuals that Thomas Chatterton Williams wrote about for The New Yorker. And these French intellectuals say, white people in France are being replaced. There's this demographic replacement that's happening, and we are the victims of it. That idea then migrates over to the U.S. Richard Spencer and a bunch of alt-right guys pick it up, and they use this idea to kind of flip the understanding that white people have privilege and power in this country to actually say, no, white people are the victims. We're the ones being oppressed. And in fact, we are being replaced by minorities, and they even use the word white genocide. That idea is unsayable, unthinkable, totally fringe, but they keep saying it and repeating it. And over time, the people who are closer to the center of the Overton window, the more mainstream conservatives, they start picking up on it. So right after this special election in Virginia, you have Tucker Carlson, who has been in the conservative movement for years, has a mainstream primetime show on Fox News. He gives a pretty clear nod toward this idea.
In 1970, 1% of that state was born outside the United States. Today, that number is 12%. That has made all the difference. So if you're wondering why the idea of national borders suddenly so unpopular among Democratic office holders, if you're wondering why the deadly plague of opiate addiction in middle America causes barely a stir in Washington, now you know the answer. They're not their base anymore. They've replaced you.
And after he does that, I get a text message from a white nationalist guy I've written about who says, hey, look, our strategy is working. You know, we stretched the Overton window and Tucker Carlson and others are filling their role.
Well, then how is the Overton window shifting in a real way? What's its effect on policy? In other words, how deeply is Trump and Trumpism going in changing American political consciousness?
Yeah, well, the core example would be immigration, right? There was a consensus understanding essentially since the 60s that the way we talk about immigration is we are a nation of immigrants, we are the great melting pot, diversity is our strength. Those truisms were uttered equally by both parties. You have George W. Bush saying it. You have Reagan saying it. Now, they might in practice, you know, implement different policies, but they don't question that fundamental premise. Then you have Trump coming along, and literally within 2 minutes of his presidential campaign, he has said the word rapists with regard to Mexican immigrants, right? So that is an attempt to shatter the Overton window with respect to what is sayable. There is this notion that we've had for a long time of this kind of great American consensus was the term that Kennedy used. You know, there are certain things that are outside of the boundaries of acceptable American discourse. And those things are really being put to the test.
Andrew, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Andrew Moranz is a contributing writer, and you can find all his reporting on the alt-right at newyorker.com.